show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Get counted down. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show, coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida. Gorgeous day here, and hope it's nice where you are as well. Weather's starting to perk up around the country, get a little better in most places anyway. So much for the weather report. It's about 85 here today and sunny, and all in all, very, very nice day. So I won't tempt any of you with all that. The spring breakers are still here. They come over a period of about 6 or 7 weeks, and I see they've, to spoil the fun, they've added more cops over at Fort Myers Beach and all that. They just can't stand seeing those kids get drunk and have a good time. Oh, my God. Things have changed over the years. Even high schoolers now go on spring break, which I'm not so sure I'm really crazy about that, but so what else is new? Hey, welcome to everybody to the Guy James Show, all of you folks over at Democrats.com and Democratic Underground, and who else we got? We got the Head On Radio Network chat room folks today, all the Hartman chat room folks that come over, all you folks over on iTunes. I want to do, I'll have some questions for you a little later. I do want to remind you that coming up in a little while, sometime I hope to get at it in this first hour, compliments of Billy Shears, when Billy and I were hightailing it around Washington not so long ago. We met with Tom Hartman, and Tom, signed a book here, his new book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class, and Billy was kind enough to grab that, and we're going to give this book away a little later on. We'll have some sort of a contest and give it away. Brand new book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class, and it's courtesy of Billy Shears, and of course, all the music we have every single day is courtesy of Billy Shears. He's the music director here at the Guy James Show, and doggone glad of it. We get some great music from him. Well, more news today. Don't know where to start. We're not really a news show here. We're a talk show. And by the way, you can join the talk at 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Love to have you join the program today. We've got a great guest coming up at 3:30. Going to have Gordon Adams. Gordon Adams is a fellow at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars in Washington, D.C., and he's going to talk to us about the Senate and House votes on the Iraq bill. He thinks it's a good outcome, a good start anyway. We'll be talking to him right around 3:30. And coming up at in the second hour, we're going to talk to a gentleman, very prolific writer for The Nations and other publications by the name of Joshua Coors. And Joshua is going to tell us a story comment on a story that he wrote, an article he wrote for The Nation's coming out in their new issue that'll blow you away. I guarantee you. It made me sick to read this story, talking about vets coming home from the war. Anyway, Joshua will be with us in that second hour. So a couple of great guests. Hope to have a good show for you today. Some of the up-and-coming things that we will talk today about today. It looks like it's all starting to cave in, don't you think, for the Bush administration right now? It is caving in. It looks like it's absolutely going to happen that Gonzo is going to go down. I cannot possibly see him weathering this storm. If he does, he'll be the most unlikely survivor of anybody that's ever had a problem in Washington. I'm sure the guy's going to go down. And also, the Bush administration is like, all of a sudden, it's every man for himself. They're no longer defending Gonzo. And the senators are no longer carrying, the Republican senators, that is, they're no longer carrying the water for the White House on the appropriations bill, or it doesn't seem like anything else. It's like, sorry, Charlie, we got elections to win coming up. There's, 21 of us? 21 of the Republican senators are up for re-election next time, and McConnell's one of them, and he's sure not going to gamble his ass. He wasn't going to stick his neck out anymore for the prez on this whole thing. So these guys are starting to do the right thing politically to save their own skin anyway. And they're just kind of bailing. They're just going to stand back and pretend that Bushy Boy isn't there anymore. They're going to save their political hides. After all, that's what politicians are there for, right? That's what they do. Save their asses. That's the name of the game. That's what they should call it in Washington. Save your ass, because that's what everybody's primarily interested in. And it's inevitable that that this would happen. The Bush ship is, well, it's taken on a lot of water. The hold is clear full of water and is sinking, sinking, sinking. And the Republican senators and many of the congressmen are jumping ship. And I don't blame them. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Situation Room. A lot of you saw this McCain interview, right, about how anybody can walk the streets in much of Baghdad. Did you see John McCain say that? I'll play this for you. I think I will anyway.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Would you be mine?
Meanwhile, insurgent car bombs killed dozens of people today in the Iraqi cities of Tel Afar and Ramadi. Violence claimed six lives in Baghdad, where a massive security crackdown is underway.
This will take
Senator
a minute, but if you didn't hear this, you need to.
That crackdown is already working. I asked him about that in the last hour. Here's what you told Bill Bennett on his radio show on Monday. There are neighborhoods in Baghdad where you and I could walk through those neighborhoods today. The U.S. is beginning to succeed in Iraq. Everything we hear, that if you leave the so-called green zone, the international zone, and you go outside of that secure area, relatively speaking, you're in trouble if you're an American.
That's where you ought to catch up on things. Wolf, General Petraeus goes out there almost every day in an unarmed Humvee. I think you ought to catch up. You see, you are giving the old line of 3 months ago. I understand it. You certainly don't get it through the filter of some of the media, but I know for a fact of much of the success we're experiencing, including the ability of Americans in many parts. Not all. We've got a long, long way to go. We only got two of the five brigades there to go into some neighborhoods in Baghdad in a secure fashion.
Senator John McCain, a Republican presidential candidate, speaking here in the Situation Room within the past hour. Let's go live to Baghdad right now. CNN's Michael Ware is standing by. Michael, you've been there, 4 years? You're walking around Baghdad on a daily basis. Has there been this improvement that Senator McCain is speaking about?
Well, I'd certainly like to bring Senator McCain up to speed if he ever gives me the opportunity. And if I have any difficulty hearing you right now, Wolf, that's because of the helicopters circling overhead and the gun battle that is blazing away just a few blocks down the road. Is Baghdad any safer? Sectarian violence, one particular type of violence, is down. But none of the American generals here on the ground have anything like Senator McCain's confidence. I mean, Senator McCain's credibility now on Iraq, which has been so solid to this point, is now being left out hanging to dry to suggest that there's any neighbourhood in this city where an American can walk freely is beyond ludicrous. I'd love Senator McCain to tell me where that neighbourhood is and he and I can go for a stroll. And to think that General David Petraeus travels this city in an unarmed Humvee. I mean, in the hour since Senator McCain has said this, I've spoken to some military sources and there was laughter down the line. I mean, certainly the general travels in a Humvee. There's multiple Humvees around it, heavily armed. There's attack helicopters, predator drones, sniper teams, all sorts of layers of protection. So no, Senator McCain is way off base on this one, Wolf.
Michael, when Senator McCain says that there are at least some areas of Baghdad where people can walk around whether it's General Petraeus, the U.S. military commander, or others, are there at least some areas where you could emerge outside of the green zone, the international zone, where people can go out, go to a coffee shop, go to a restaurant, and simply take a stroll?
I can answer this very quickly, Wolf. No. No way on earth can a Westerner, particularly an American, stroll any street of this capital of more than 5 million people. I mean, if Al-Qaeda doesn't get wind of you, or if one of the Sunni insurgent groups don't descend upon you, or if someone doesn't tip off a Shia militia, then the nearest criminal gang is just going to see dollar signs and scoop you up. Honestly, Wolf, you barely last 20 minutes out there. I don't know what part of Neverland Senator McCain is talking about when he says we can go strolling in Baghdad.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day.
Well, there you have it.
A
beautiful day in the neighborhood at Baghdad, courtesy of John McCain. What's he been drinking? I think we have a right to know of one of our United States senator who, by the way, has missed, 37 votes so far because he's out on the campaign trail. His campaign for the presidency is a whole hell of a lot more important than voting on the war, of course. Here's a man that's out talking about the war day in and day out of what we ought to do about it. But will he take time out from his campaign to vote on what we need to do? No. No. That's not quite important enough. Now, is it, John? Amazing. Really an amazing story. And, of course, we hear that... what's his name? Why can I never... General McCaffrey. He met with the Prez to tell him... his assessment. He just came back from Iraq once again. He's been there once again, and he's an influential retired Army general. And his new assessment of the whole situation in Iraq is rather dire. And he had a bunch of meetings with David Petraeus and other U.S. commanders. And his statement, Barry McCaffrey said, "The population in Iraq is in despair." Man, that's not a good thing to hear. In despair, the population is. Life in many of the urban areas is now desperate. Does that sound like the surge is doing a great thing? Has there been any progress with the surge? Yes. Been a pound of progress over here and 2 pounds of heading backwards over there. That's what's happened so far. McCaffrey has visited twice with Bush to talk about the war in December, and now he's turned in a new report. But don't expect Bush any time to take advantage of this report and do anything. It says McCaffrey is quoted as being gloomy about the continued strength of the insurgency. And at this point, he said, about 27,000 fighters are being held and at least 20,000 others have been killed, yet enemy combatants continue to produce new leaders and foot soldiers. And he says the result 5 years into the war is that their sophistication, numbers, and lethality go up, not down, as they incur these staggering battle losses. So, not a very good outlook but by one of the more esteemed retired generals who looked into the situation. And I might add, a man who has supported this war pretty much all along and just up until the last few months he's started to turn. You can see him starting to turn. But here we are, 5 years. 5 years into a war based on lies and deceit and deception and government-inspired media propaganda and manipulation of all kinds and to start with, cherry-picking intelligence out of context to support the delusional neocon ideas, their arrogance, hubris, and probably the thing that mystifies me most of all. In any presidential administration, it should be filled with scholars and very intelligent men. And, you know, we heard, for example, how Condi Rice was so damned intelligent and well-versed on policy in the world, or what American policy should be, and she was just brilliant. First of all, you can't name me a damn thing on the positive side of the ledger that Condi Rice has done, and I must tell you that I didn't expect any more out of her than we've gotten. I really didn't. But you would think any administration would have some highly intelligent people who somebody somewhere would be well-versed on just about anything that might come up on this ever-shrinking globe of ours. And yet, the ignorance of this administration, of the Middle Eastern culture, their politics, their demographics, I mean, man, their ignorance was stunning. Just stunning. And, you know, Iraq is in turmoil. We've got increased numbers of insurgents fighting an American military force, increased Muslim fundamentalism, several hundred thousand Iraqi and Americans dead and injured, several million Iraqis having fled the country, almost $500 billion spent or more. Never mind the debt. Our kids will pay it. That's what they're saying. And you know, a general finally says publicly what the American people have known for the last several years, that the situation is dire and getting worse. You know, McCaffrey would do everyone a huge service by recommending a rapid U.S. military withdrawal from Iraq. And then the Iraqi sectarian factions and military groups that are now fighting each other, and the U.S., and what's left of the coalition troops, they'd have the country all to themselves, and they could work out a solution of their choosing or complete the destruction of Iraq as a country. One or the other is going to happen, whether we're there or not. And please, please, please don't anybody give me the latest Republican argument about, oh, what'll we do when the killing starts? Just like when we left Vietnam, all the killing that took place. Now, if we leave Iraq, we can't leave Iraq now. Why, it would be inhuman. It would be, a terrible morally, it'd be a terrible thing to do. Now, first of all, the Republicans talking about ethics and morals, that in and of itself is quite the very humorous. But don't insult my intelligence and tell me that all of a sudden this Republican administration really cares about the loss of lives this Bush war's caused or will cause. I mean, that's a laughable argument to try and make at this point. For we know that the loss of Iraqi lives has not and will not ever be a consideration in their decisions regarding this lunatic military excursion into Iraq. Now, I'm I've done a lot of reading lately on Richard Perle and Paul Wolfowitz and Douglas Feith and some of those folks that were heavily involved in pushing us into this war. And really what I said a few moments ago about their ignorance of the situation there being absolutely stunning is an understatement by many times over. I've cautioned you, and at times I've had to sit back and caution myself. We look at these people, the talking heads, back when this war was starting. We look at the Richard Perles and the Feiths and the Wolfowitzes and that kind of folks. And we knew that they were taking advice from Shalaby and people like that. And so the American public was lulled to sleep into thinking, well, you know, these people, they're foreign policy experts, and they really know what they're doing. Perhaps we ought to listen to them. After all, they know a lot of things that we don't. They didn't know a lot of things that we don't. Don't kid yourself. Turns out they didn't know a damn thing that we don't already know. Tragic situation that we listened to these fools to take us into a war. Absolutely tragic. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. It's Phil up in Daytona Beach.
Hi, Phil.
Hi. Yeah, those PNAC bastards, they've had this thing planned. They've had for years, you know, and I think it's more than just an ideology. I think it's a marriage of an ideology, a marriage of corporate greed, and then also a political power. You know, there was a bunch of folks with different goals, right?
Oh yeah.
And they all married together, and everyone's getting what they want. The PNAC crazies are you know, getting their chance to take over the world. You know, the Republican Party maintained power. The corporations that fund the Republican Party, you know, get all their breaks, and the oil companies and Halliburton are getting theirs, and defense contractors and Lockheed Martin, all them, they're making new airplanes, and you know, I mean.
Well, you know, Phil, the part that mystifies me, and you're right about everything you said.
Yeah.
What?
That's because I listen to you, Guy.
Yeah, well, and of course I'm.
All my material.
Of course I'm never wrong, and but and I think you're absolutely correct on everything you said. But the part that just really makes me just flabbergasted over the whole thing is that yes, okay, the contractors they're making their money, and the hawks, the people who are in this to make. You know, the profiteers, they're doing fine.
Yeah.
But Bush and the likes of a Wolfowitz and a Richard Perle and Douglas Feith and a Cheney, this is going to be their legacies until the day they die. And I can't imagine, being a G.W. Junior Bush the way he is, I can't imagine going to my grave kind of like Robert McNamara ended up being the bad guy for the Vietnam War, going to my grave with the entire world knowing that I'm some sort of a dumbass who got involved in a war that was a tragedy, and that's my presidential legacy. And I just can't imagine being the president of the United States and settling for that.
But you see, he's missing some of his humanity, you know, he's missing parts of being fully human.
He's a sociopath.
He has no conscience, neither does Cheney or a lot of these guys. And no matter what the whole entire world says in their head, they're still right. Now, McNamara had some kind of awakening later on.
He had an epiphany in the last few years of his life, but
yeah, you know, and he had some remorse, but these guys, man,
they're going to be villains.
Yes, but it ain't going to bother them.
Oh man,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're right about the lack of humanity. You're exactly right. It's not there.
I have a question for you, Guy.
Yeah.
When did people start talking about his legacy in regards to different politicians? You know, I remember Clinton's legacy. You know, when did that kind of language start? Because I don't remember it in my younger years.
Well, not with the general public. I as people that are historians, it's always been an important thing, and it's always been a talk about people's legacy.
Limited to that crowd, you know, but I think the cable TV, maybe that's...
Yeah, well, news, it goes back to when did you first hear the word gravitas? that was a big favorite a couple of years ago. Oh, yeah.
I'm waiting for one of our birds to get shot down by a missile that, you know, we'll be told was an Iranian missile.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably what's gonna. This is insane, guy.
It is.
I would think that the 535 members of the Congress, and I'm not a lawyer, but I would think they're criminally, they're accessories to the crime by allowing these guys to Nuremberg. The reason why those guys hung at Nuremberg, the Nazis, was because they launched an unprovoked war of aggression.
Yeah, Phil, but don't forget one thing. I got to go because I got to get a hold of our guest.
Oh, yes.
But don't forget one thing. Those guys in Nuremberg, they didn't make the laws and they didn't enforce the laws. We've got a group in there now of our 535 congressmen. They can do what they want with the law. So they are the law. Phil, thanks for your call. Good to hear from
you. Thank you, Guy.
All right, we're going to... we're going to head on out for a break right now, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days, so... Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Salmon on the mountain, says the Dharma got the thumb. Hellfire and brimstone, swap for oil and guns. When we're pushing up daisies, we all look the same. In the name of the fire. they sent him to the wars to be slain. On this Jacob's ladder, the only way up is down. One step from disaster, two to make the higher ground. On this Jacob's ladder, the only way up is down. One step from disaster, two to make the higher ground. Jacob's ladder.
And we're back, and welcome everybody back to the program. And as I promised, we've got Gordon Adams with us. Gordon is a fellow at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars in Washington. He's a director of security policy studies over at George Washington University, one of my favorite places in Washington. Gordon, are you with us?
I'm right there.
Hey, thanks for being with us today. I was just telling somebody today, as an aside here, over at George Washington University, I love that area of town, tree-lined streets and everything, such a gorgeous campus there. We regularly have folks on from George Washington University. Welcome to the program. Glad to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me, Guy.
Big issue with this appropriations bill passing the House and now kind of a little bit different version of it passing the Senate, and it appears it will go to the president's desk and get vetoed. Where do you think, what's your thinking on this? Will anything meaningful come out of it?
Well, I think the meaningfulness will probably be in imagery, but imagery is not inconsequential in Washington, as everybody knows. The versions between the two houses are slightly different. They contain different deadlines. One is mandatory, one is non-binding. They're going to have to chew with each other on this language before this thing goes to the president, so there'll be conference issues that come up. But what's interesting about the Senate piece is that the House had quite a fight, and the Senate didn't have much of a fight. There were a few people who crossed over, and it managed to work its way to a majority, but the Republicans decided not to filibuster, not to stand in the way, but to allow something that they were sure the president was going to veto to go forward to the president in order to encourage that veto. So the Republicans have decided, rather than make this a long battle, they were going to make it a short one on Capitol Hill. What they're doing, of course, is setting up an argument between the White House and the Congress, which is kind of a show-me-the-money argument, with the White House saying, money's running out, forces running dry, can't abandon the troops in the field, won't sign this bill, come back to me with something that I can sign. So it's kind of the next step in the Washington ballet, pretty much predictable now.
Well, I kind of saw two ways of thinking on this issue. One, that yes, let's just get it in the works. Let's get it over with, get it done with, so we can move on and not have a long, drawn-out discussion about how we're abandoning the troops, not getting this done. The other one being that the 21 Republican senators that are having to run for re-election in 2008 pretty much maybe cut bait on this thing and said, hey, pal, to the White House, hey, you're on your own from now on, and possibly do you think there's a chance some of them may defect if this if he threatens a veto, and there may be a few of them running for re-election who might cross over and make this veto proof.
The interesting question is going to be whether the majority, when the veto comes down, and it will surely come down, whether the majority is able to craft a kind of a compromise language that brings enough Republicans across. I'm not sure we're there yet. Most of those Republicans, even the Norm Colemans of the world, lined up with the president on the vote in the Senate. Pretty strong party discipline. You had Gordon Smith go over and Chuck Hagel go over, but not very many. So they were keeping their powder dry, I guess I'd say, for this round, until they see how it comes back from the president. Obviously, the way things develop on the ground in Iraq is going to affect this as well. I think your calculus is right. There are some Republicans that are awfully concerned if this thing goes on into the middle of the election year as to how it's going to affect the Senate majority.
Well, what kind of dialogue will take place amongst the House and the Senate leaders over this to try and get something that can go to the White House where, you know, maybe there can be some sort of a conciliatory movement and get something actually meaningful done on this?
I don't think either the House or Senate Democrats expect the president to do anything but veto, and the president has been pretty strong about that. So this round, I don't expect much in the way of changes that are going to make this veto-proof, not at this stage. And I doubt that they're going to be the kinds of changes that will make it overridable when it comes back from the president. But that's going to be the very interesting question addressed in the next week or two once they get a compromise done between the Democrats on both sides. They sent the thing up. The president has said no and hell no. And then they have to come back and write a language that, you know, either is certainly going to go through, but that will only mean taking off conditions about timing for withdrawal, or, you know, confronting their majorities on both sides in the Congress.
Okay. So we're saying, okay, Mr. President, you've said all along you've supported the troops. And now you've vetoed this bill. You say we need money for the troops. You've vetoed this bill, which the Senate and the House made in good faith and sent to you. How do you, Mr. President, win the battle of the media right now when it seems the tide, at least, has turned so against you, both in the public and in the media in Washington? How's he going to figure that he can come out ahead on this with the propaganda?
Well, this is a classical game of perception and a classical game of Washington chicken. It's going to be who blinks first. And is the president going to be successful in laying responsibility for slow funding on the Hill, or the Hill is going to lay responsibility for slow funding on the president? I don't know that we can see yet exactly how that's going to play out, but you've described the problem absolutely accurately. It's a perceptual problem, and it's going to be one of saying which one of you is abandoning the troops in the field.
Do you think this president is so wounded that he cannot make the case in front of the American public?
He's having a terribly hard time right now. Nothing is moving in the public opinion polls that we see here. And no matter who is looking at it, his popularity ratings are down. A majority of American people want some kind of a deadline. They want the troops home at some point soon. They do not support the war effort. So everybody's doing a little bit of betting on the come here. Their president's hoping the situation looks like it's improved enough in Baghdad. He's going to rely on the second half of Barry McCaffrey's report that came out today about how things are going in Iraq. The Democratic Party is going to rely on the first half of Barry McCaffrey's report, which says there's no effective government anywhere in the country and nobody can walk around without a lot of security protection. And they're going to have this argument over the next month. Events on the ground will have an impact, and any movement in public opinion will have an impact as well.
Well, you're exactly right. We've spoken about McCaffrey's report on the program, and I completely agree. Have a caller that might have a question for us here, right here. Mm-hmm. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. It's Greg from Connecticut.
Yes.
Have a question.
You have a question for Gordon?
What is going to happen if Bush somehow uses the troops as sort of his chess pieces and lets funding run out, and then we have Katie Couric there pointing out to troops saying, well, see these troops here, they're not getting food or they're not getting armor now. Will that have a bad effect, or what do you think will be the result of this chess game that Bush is playing with funding?
It's a very good question. One of the things that I think people need to keep in mind is that the exaggeration of rhetoric is a standard ploy here. The president is saying we got to have this money by April 15th, or people won't get fed, they won't get boots, they won't get armor, they won't get uniforms, they won't have gas, and they won't be able to operate because we won't have the money anymore. That's actually an exaggeration. It is certainly true that as you go through the year, you have a problem increasingly funding when the money hasn't been appropriated. In general, experience says when you're going through this process, that point comes about June. It doesn't come in April. It comes in June. It gets harder for the services over the months of April and May and June to scare up the resources they have to find to buy the boots, shoes, uniforms, and food and pay the contractors and all that stuff that needs to be done in Iraq. They can find it. They find it by standing down training exercises, standing down maintenance of equipment in the military depots, halting payments for things like repainting the officers' club or fixing the barracks or ensuring the water pipe is laid on a base. They go into the operations accounts of the Pentagon, and they have the flexibility to set aside those programs and that funding and lay it against the fiscal requirement in Iraq. Now, the truth is it gets harder with each month. When you get to July, it's really a crisis. If it lasted until July, though, it would surprise me.
Yeah, it's simply not going to happen, is it? I mean, that's a political battle that can't go that long. I think both sides would have exhausted all their arguments by that time.
Somebody's going to blink, and they're going to find some kind of compromise solution that unleashes the money, but it's going to have to give the Democrats on the Hill some kind of solace about planning for a withdrawal. We just haven't seen what that's going to look like yet.
All right, so if we're sending you to Monte Carlo with a bunch of chips, where are you putting them on this? How do you think it's going to end up?
I think the hardest thing in the world for the Democratic majority in the Congress is going to be to be put in the position of saying they're not providing funding for troops in the field. So in the end, I think the president has a slight upper hand here with respect to the money and the fact that there are 150,000 troops deployed. It wouldn't surprise me, too, to see what looks like improvement in Iraq over the next 2 or 3 months. Now, that's going to be very selective reporting. It's going to be based on these individual guard outposts that are now scattered throughout Baghdad. It's going to be based on the fact that some of the insurgents have stood down, particularly the Muqtada al-Sadr people, because they don't want this confrontation and they're prepared to wait the system out. But you can look for the second half of that Barry McCaffrey report to begin to look reasonably good over the next 2 or 3 months. While this battle's being played out here in Washington, even though in the long term it doesn't necessarily mean that the situation has improved very much.
Well, we got the classic situation right now of we've plugged the dike was leaking in Baghdad. We've plugged part of the dike and it's sprung leaks other places. It appears that the water's just seeking its own level as far as the terrorism and the sectarian violence is going on.
Yeah, Guy, what's important here, I think, is, and it's very hard for us to accept this reality and to recognize it, is that much of what's happening in Iraq is outside our control. It's really in control of the Iraqi factions. So how this gets played out is not something that our presence is going to have anywhere near the impact on that we're arguing about in Washington, D.C.
Absolutely. And that's I wanted to put that question to you. I talked about it before you came on with us today. The argument coming now from the Republicans and the conservatives is that, well, we can't leave now. We can't leave now. It would be morally and ethically wrong to leave. Look what happened when we left Vietnam. There'd be this slaughter. And I for one, am saying that I don't think this administration really cares about that end of it. Do you see that as a big part of this argument?
I think it's a big part of the rhetorical argument here in the United States. I'm not so sure that it describes an accurate reality in Iraq. If you look at the polling of Iraqis, it's very interesting to see that most Iraqis wish the Americans would leave, and most Iraqis tend to support attacks on the American forces. That's by polling majorities. It's really quite a stunning outcome of polling in Iraq. Americans, we've managed to work ourselves into a position there where we're not very popular, and we're not having a big impact on events there. Much of how this is going to play out is going to play out between the Sunni and the Shi'i and the Kurds in Iraq. We're just not going to have the impact that we think we're going to have. So if we're arguing, we got to stay because otherwise the society will fall apart. If you read the front half of Barry McCaffrey's report, it's pretty much fallen apart anyway.
Yes.
And our presence there doesn't seem to be preventing that from happening and is having an impact on Iraqi public opinion that leads to a majority of support for attacks on the American forces, which means we're not stopping it. We're really become a target set in the Civil War. As soon as we recognize that, it's got to have some kind of an impact on policy in terms of how soon we decide. It's up to them, and it's always been up to them.
And we have John McCain now saying, it's safe to walk the streets of Baghdad in most places. I don't know if you saw that report or not, but I can't think of the CNN reporter that came back and said that was laughable. You wouldn't last 20 minutes walking any place in
Baghdad. Well, I'd just love to see John McCain test the proposition. I think he might be very surprised.
Yeah, talking about how Petraeus is able to drive around in an unarmored Humvee, and I guess that's true, but he actually travels with an armada of armed Humvees.
Surrounded by protection.
With air support from helicopters as well. So, again, the battle of the rhetoric. Tell us, if you would take a moment, George Washington, a very prestigious university, you're the director of security policy studies. Can you give us a short synopsis of what that encompasses?
Well, security policy studies program at George Washington University is a graduate program. It's a terminal master's degree program that has been designed for people largely who are looking for government employment or employment in the private sector with international responsibilities, international organizations, private business, or what have you. It takes in about 40 or 50 students every year for a two-year master's degree, puts them through a security policy studies curriculum. It's one of probably the two or three or four best programs in the area. There's a good one at Georgetown, American University, Johns Hopkins, SAIS, George Washington, and George Mason. They're really five campuses that emphasize different aspects of international reality, and GW's program is a strong one.
I see. Okay. Well, we have Jonathan Turley on once in a while from George Washington, and always enjoy his comments. I've certainly enjoyed having you on the program today. You've given us a lot of insight into the situation, a lot to chew on here, and I appreciate it very, very much.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks, Guy.
Gordon Adams, an interesting fellow. And he actually is a fellow at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars in Washington, D.C. And what he doesn't know about this situation, really, in the earlier talks with him, probably isn't worth knowing. Highly schooled in foreign policy. Seems that's something we have a... man, are we missing out on people in this administration having... knowledge of foreign policy. Just absolutely amazing. I want to play a little something for you that I found and I thought you would find very interesting in these times. Something that is very germane to this situation we're facing right now. We've talked about impeachment. As you know, I think impeachment would be a remedy for a lot of the situation that we're in. I think that no president in our history has ever deserved impeachment more than the president that we have now, and I know many of you feel the same way. I don't know if we'll get it done, but it should be done. And I do think our Democratic leaders should make sure that it's done. And I want to take you back to July 25th, 1974, and I want you to listen carefully to the words of the late, very great Barbara Jordan.
James Madison again at the Constitutional Convention. A president is impeachable if he attempts to subvert the Constitution. The Constitution charges the president with the task of taking care that the laws be faithfully executed. A president is impeachable if he attempts to subvert the Constitution. If the impeachment provision in the Constitution of the United States will not reach the offenses charged here, then perhaps that 18th century Constitution should be abandoned to a 20th century paper shredder. Has the President committed offenses and planned and directed and acquiesced in a course of conduct which the Constitution will not tolerate? That's the question. We know that. We know the question. We should now forthwith proceed to answer the question. It is reason and not passion which must guide our deliberations, guide our debate, and guide our decision.
The late great Barbara Jordan, an amazing statement made by her on July 25th, 1974. I always had immense respect for Barbara Jordan, and I think that statement says it all. It was 1974, July 25th, and that comment that she made right there is every bit as appropriate today towards this White House as it was those days that she made that statement. Again, that was July 25th, 1974. Said it all. And as always, Barbara Jordan said it in a way that most people cannot say it. The eloquence, the intelligence, the passion of that woman was something to behold. And it's too bad we don't have a couple of Barbara Jordans around today. We do not, in my opinion. She was fair. She was well-versed. She never opened her mouth without knowing what she was talking about. And never, ever made a statement any more important than that one right there. We're facing the same thing right now. We have an administration that has the full attempt, the full idea of subverting the Constitution of the United States. And here we are in another mess right now with this U.S. attorney scandal. That is exactly what they've tried to do here. They've tried to influence the electoral process in the United States. They were laying the foundation for election fraud in the next election. I don't think there's any doubt that that's what was going on with this Gonzales mess that we're in right now. This White House, one Karl Rove, and anybody else that in there, that his helpers, his aides. I think that's the absolute intent, and I think it's the real story behind this whole thing. It is my opinion that that is what they're after. I've read everything I can on this, found out all the little details that have been out there, and it appears to me that this is an attempt to try and influence elections in 2008 and stack the deck. As we mentioned yesterday, there had been some 260 Democrats prosecuted by U.S. attorneys over the last 5 years, and only 70 Republicans. You tell me. Is that just some wild coincidence? Is that the Republicans going to come back and tell us, no, the reason for that is the Democrats are so much more corrupt than Republicans. Can you say Duke Cunningham? Can you say Jack Abramoff? Can you say Tom DeLay? Can you say Bob Ney? You give me a list of Democrats who are more corrupt than those people, that have held offices and positions of those people, and are more corrupt than those people. And then try and tell me, as I've heard some Republicans say, well, of course there's more Democrats prosecuted. They're more corrupt. BS. And don't you believe it when this administration comes around, and it's the argument you hear all the time now. You hear the Robert Novaks. You hear the Buchanans on TV. You hear all the apologists for the right-wingers come on and say, hey, this is politics. That's the way it is. That's the way it is. Don't you believe it. I am not saying that politics doesn't take place. Hardball politics takes place in every administration. Absolutely. I agree with that. But not to this degree. Not to the degree where you have the White House interfering with the duties of United States attorneys that have already been appointed, were appointed at the pleasure of the President of the United States, but are not required in any way, shape, or form to report to the President of the United States on every decision they make, especially when it comes to political matters. Do not accept it when they say this is just politics. It happens in every administration, because that is a lie. It's a gross exaggeration of the truth. When anybody brings that argument up to you, you ask them, tell me, give me a list. Tell me of the Jack Abramoffs, the Tom DeLays, the Bob Nays, the Duke Cunninghams. The Duke Cunningham, by the way, with the most egregious violation of graft and corruption ever in the history of the United States Congress. Ever. In federal prison for 8 years. Oh, and the tears that rolled down his cheeks as when he said he was sorry to the American public. He wasn't sorry that he did it. He was sorry that he got caught. And I think you will find out that with this Wilkes guy that's involved in this Dusty Fago and all that that's going on, I think you will find a trail from Duke Cunningham that goes right to the office of the President of the United States. In fact, I know you will. That whole mess is headed there right now. There's a little matter of this $140,000 so-called furniture contract. That the first time this Wilkes guy ever got a contract was with the White House for $140,000. Happens in every administration. It makes it to some degree, but not to the degree that we've seen inside this cesspool of an administration. And you cannot deny that that's exactly what it's been. Election fraud. If we only knew the truth, the real truth about election fraud in this country, will we ever know the real truth about election fraud starting in the year 2000 and moving on to the present day? Would that we could know the truth about actual election fraud in the United States during that period of time. But it's doubtful that we ever will. But just going back to that argument, it just really boils my blood when I hear a Buchanan say it or a Bill Bennett say it or who else says it. Well, guess what? It's politics. Tucker Carlson, it's politics. That's always what happens, folks. It's politics. Business as usual. You may not like it, but it's politics. Well, as you well know, I do not have the greatest opinion of politics. But until you show me the proof in the pudding, that it's just as bad on the Democratic side, then I shall have to take as face value what I believe to be the truth. And that is that during this administration, there's been a pattern of crime and corruption inside the Republican Party. And if you don't think that's true, you tell me right now, and we'll hope maybe we'll talk about this a little bit in the second hour. You tell me right now that these people who denied that they said they even use email, and they pass messages back and forth, official messages back and forth, from one member of the White House staff to another, from the Attorney General's office as well, but they didn't use the White House or the official government servers. Oh, no. They hid their messages on the Republican National Committee server so they could keep them secret. And that, my friends, and the White House is against the law in the United States. You cannot do that. And I see Henry Waxman has ordered the RNC to save copies of all the emails that might have come from the White House and you know, them communicating that way. What are the chances of those not ending up in the shredder? But that's the degree they've gone to. They've hidden their communications back and forth, their sensitive secret communications, run them through the RNC server so that we'd never be able to find out what they said for sure, because they know damn well the shredder's probably running day and night over at the RNC even as we speak. Politics as usual? I don't think so. Richard Nixon? George W. Bush? You give me politics any time on the Democratic side that's compared with either one of those. I want to hear it. You can't do it. The comparison simply is not there. Well, We hope you'll give us a call in the second hour of the program, 866-546-5254. Coming up, we've got a disgraceful story that you need to hear. Joshua Kors. This is, well, wait till you hear it. And also, we're going to give away that book coming up in the second hour as well. Tom Hartman's new book, Screwed. Boy, that's how I feel nowadays. So, stay with us. We'll be back right after the news with a great interview, and we hope you'll join us. Here on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. After narrowly passing a Senate bill with supplemental spending and a date of withdrawal for U.S. troops in Iraq, President Bush repeated his promise to veto any such bill. The president added, members of Congress should stop making political statements and start providing much-needed funds for the troops. The White House has withdrawn its nomination of Sam Fox for Belgian ambassador. Controversy rose when several Senate Democrats, including Senator John Kerry, criticized a $50,000 contribution made Fox made to the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, a group who questioned Senator Kerry's war record. Iranian television is showing video of the lone female British sailor and the 14 other sailors and Marines taken captive by Iran. The footage shows Faye Turney in black scarf saying she and her shipmates trespassed into Iranian territory. Prime Minister Tony Blair, in response, said the showing of the video is a breach of the Geneva Convention and that the Brits have proof the Royal Navy crew members were in Iraqi waters and not in Iranian territory. In Manila, over 30 preschool children and their teachers were released after being held hostage on a bus for several hours. The hostage taker is a daycare center owner and took the children hostage to draw attention to poor education and housing conditions in the Philippines. In Fallujah, Iraqi security forces stopped an attack on their compound that included two suicide truck bombs containing chlorine gas and mortar fire. According to the U.S. military, the attack was a coordinated one but thwarted when Iraqi security forces opened fire, blowing up both trucks before they entered the compound. In retaliation for the truck bombings that killed over 60 people in the town of Talifar yesterday, Shiite militants and police went on a killing spree, killing dozens of Sunnis. According to a local resident, the gunmen walked the streets of the Sunni neighborhoods, firing into homes. The Iraqi army has arrested 18 policemen accused of being involved. The new Army Surgeon General said the military doesn't have enough money to hire nurses and mental health professionals to treat the troops. Major General Gail Pollack said she feared the troops' morale could suffer as a result. In South Korea, America's CIA director said today North Korea's nuclear test last October failed. Director Michael Hayden says the unsuccessful test suggests Pyongyang's nuclear power may be an exaggeration. Last month, North Korea agreed to abandon its nuclear weaponry program in exchange for $330 million in aid. In Texas, the governor has signed into law an extension of gun rights. According to the law, Texans will now have the right to use deadly force to defend themselves in their homes, offices, and cars. This is the Quality News Network.
Here's good news about your money. Monterey County Bank has won the Bauer Financial 5-Star Superior Rating for financial strength and stability, making it one of the safest banks in Monterey County for your money. It's nice to know your money is in a safe place, but there are even more reasons to bank with Monterey County Bank. They now have 4 convenient locations in Carmel, Monterey, Carmel Valley, and Pacific Grove. And Monterey County Bank is the oldest locally owned bank, now celebrating its 30th anniversary serving you. Here's another important point. Local businesses have come to trust and rely on Monterey County Bank's position as the county's number one SBA small business lender. Safety, convenience, and local people you can trust. That's Monterey County Bank. Stop in at one of our 4 branches and find out why you can bank on us. Monterey County Bank, SBA preferred lender and equal housing lender, member FDIC.
LG Electronics is teaming up with Google to provide online products on their mobile devices. The 5th largest mobile phone maker plans to provide services like Google Maps and Gmail to select handsets sold around the world. In congressional testimony today, Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke said the economy will not slip into a recession, despite contrary comments made by former Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan. Bernanke also added the market for risky mortgages doesn't appear to be affecting the overall economy. Video game retailer GameStop saw its share spike 12% following its announcement of a quarterly profit on earnings of nearly $130 million. And Microsoft announced that it is selling a new version of the Xbox 360. This one will have a 120-gigabyte hard drive and an enhanced high-definition video connection. Microsoft is attempting to expand its market appeal for its console. Spice manufacturer McCormick will beat Wall Street expectations, I should say, by announcing its quarterly profit more than tripled. The company says sales grew and restructuring programs successfully reduced operating costs. Light sweet crude is trading at $64.22 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange, and looking to Wall Street right now, the Dow Jones is down 67 points, the NASDAQ is down 9 points, and the S&P 500 is down 7 points. You can always log on and find more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Jay Gallet.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. So glad to have all of you along with us here this afternoon. It's a beautiful day here in Southwest Florida. I hope it's nice where you are as well. We've got a great interview coming up, as promised. We've got Joshua Kors with us to talk to us about this latest article in The Nation that was brought to my – I regularly read The Nation, but I'm glad somebody brought this one to my attention right away. I am, frankly – just blown away by this article. Joshua, welcome to the program.
Good to be here, Guy.
I know you write about you regularly write for The Nation and other publications as well.
Yes, I've written about military issues for a while.
You know, we've all kept track of this latest Walter Reed Hospital scandal and the VA problems that are happening and so forth, but I'm frankly just appalled reading this latest story of yours here about John Towne. And if you would give our audience an overall view here of what happened, and we'll take it from there.
Absolutely. John Towne is a specialist who served in Ramadi, Iraq. He was very near a rocket explosion at the base there, and because of that explosion, he went largely deaf, had a lot of memory and anger issues. I'm sure your listeners are familiar with a lot of the signs of traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. Came home suffering from those issues and was deemed not combat ready. So at that point, they had Army had a chance to discharge him due to his injuries. They did something quite different. They discharged him with a pre-existing psychological condition known as a personality disorder. And the reason that's significant is because by discharging him that way, they never had to pay him disability or medical benefits for the rest of his life.
A pre-existing condition, that sounds like something an insurance company would pull, and here we have the United States government pulling it. Let me ask this question, an elementary question to be sure to start this. If this guy had this pre-existing condition, didn't he go through some sort of a psychological and evaluation before he ever went in the service?
That's right, Guy, and I think that's what highlights the absurdity of these personality disorder cases I've been looking at the last 6 months. soldiers coming into the Army are screened first when they join the service and a second time before they're deployed to Iraq in Specialist Towns' case. And in every other case I looked at, these soldiers, by the medical papers themselves, were perfectly healthy. It's only when they return from Iraq with severe wounds that this pre-existing condition is discovered.
Soldiers?
Soldiers, that's right.
That's the real story in all this, isn't it?
That certainly is. Town is not an isolated incident. I interviewed numerous soldiers in his shoes, and over the past 6 years across the armed forces, 22,500 have been discharged with personality disorder.
That's called a Chapter 5-13.
That's correct.
22,000 that somehow escaped the evaluations when they went in the military, escaped the evaluation before finding this out before they went to Iraq, but have been let go, cut loose from the VA since they came home.
That's right. And, you know, when you look at the details, the scandal takes on a whole new flavor because what they're classifying as a personality disorder really does stretch the limits of absurdity. In John's case, of course, they thought deafness was a personality disorder. I also examined the case of Richard Dykstra. He had a bilateral hernia that he suffered in Iraq. They thought his stomach ailments were a personality disorder.
My God. Now, in John Towne's case, a 107-millimeter rocket struck 2 feet above his head, right?
That's right. They had to remove the shrapnel from his neck.
Unbelievable. So he comes back. He goes to the VA. Well, actually, before he goes to the VA, the Army cuts him loose, but they weren't exactly upfront with him.
No. In fact, his doctor, Dr. Mark Wexler at Fort Carson, Colorado, made him explicit promises, he says, about what would happen if he agreed to a personality disorder discharge. He was told that he would get to receive disability benefits, get to keep his signing bonus, and also that he would be able to be treated by the VA in the coming years. None of that was the case.
So he ends up without his disability payments. He ends up without any medical care from the VA and has to give back whatever portion of his signing bonus according to the time served?
That's right, and that's kind of the final blow for all of these wounded soldiers coming back. When they find out that they have to give back their signing bonus, and each of the soldiers I spoke to said they were directly told by their military doctors that they would get to keep the bonus. When they find out on the very final day on base that they have to give it back, that means that these wounded soldiers leave the Army owing the Army several thousand dollars.
Oh my God, this is you've reported on many military issues. Is this the ugliest one you've seen?
Well, the examination I did of female soldiers who were being sexually assaulted by other soldiers while the military brass turned a blind eye, that was certainly an ugly examination itself. But I think the span of this really warrants the label of scandal. When you look at what the military is saving by purposely misdiagnosing these soldiers, we're talking about $12.5 billion. That's $8 billion in saved disability pay and $4.5 billion in medical care over these soldiers' lifetimes.
This is a money-saving tactic?
Well, I think there are many reasons why this is happening. I think the motive of these doctors is really a key component of this issue. They do save a tremendous amount of money, and I was also told by inside sources at various military bases that there's pressure on these doctors from military officials outside the hospital to purposely misdiagnose them.
So we have a specialist town back home in Ohio now. No veterans benefits. He's signed out completely. No veteran benefit, no VA care. Whatever medical needs that he has from here on in, whether or not they're militarily related or not, he bears the cost on his own. And he's got this stigma. How's he faring after all this?
Well, as you can imagine, not very well. He's a trooper. I spoke with him just the other day. He just got a minimum wage job at a local factory. But at this point, his wife is really supporting the family and his medical bills by working an assembly line at Filtech, an Ohio oil filtering processing plant. Mm-hmm. It's a struggling family at this point, and they could really use the disability benefits that he was promised.
Well, of course, and he'll probably have reoccurring medical problems after this is all over.
No doubt.
And even the post-traumatic stress syndrome, is he suffering from that?
He is. He spoke to me about terrible nightmares and rage issues. Plus, there's also, along with traumatic brain injury, comes the memory problems. As he said to me, he'll be driving places and he'll forget where he was going. The reason he had to be discharged from the Army in the first place was because at his desk job at Fort Carson, he began to forget some of the Army's regulations. You can imagine the frustration he felt in not being able to perform his job due to the injury.
Now, you didn't speak to Dr. Wexler, but you did speak to his commander.
No, I actually did speak with Dr. Wexler.
Oh, okay.
I did. And I spoke to his commander. Wexler in person would not address the case. Later, he did send me an email in which he directly denied discussing the benefits issue with John Towne, but he would not address the issue of whether Towne was misdiagnosed, and he also declined to address the issue of other soldiers he had treated who I had spoken with. One case I came upon, for example, Chris Mosier, was suffering from delusions. He came back from Iraq after watching many of his buddies explode in a mortar attack. And after that, he was haunted by visions. He came back to Des Moines after being diagnosed as having a personality disorder by Dr. Wexler. He received 6 days of treatment, came back to Des Moines and posted a note on the door saying that the Iraqis were after him and he had to save the family, then shot himself.
Oh my God. Well, that brings me to what I considered the most idiotic comment that I think I've seen one of the military people make in a long time as part of your story. This statement by Colonel Knorr explaining that there's a simple explanation as to why in so many cases this lifelong condition of personality disorder isn't apparent until after serving in Iraq. You want to finish up on that one?
Yes, he said it.
This statement by him blew me away.
It did catch me by surprise too. He said that it could lay dormant, this condition, and then be triggered by a stressful event. I spoke with Keith Armstrong, a clinical professor at the Department of Psychiatry at the University of California, San Francisco. Armstrong has been treating veterans for over 20 years at the San Francisco VA. He said that's simply not how personality disorder works.
I think Mr. Armstrong probably has a bit more expertise in the field than Colonel Knorr at Fort Carson.
He does. In fact, he just wrote a book about it called Courage After Fire, dealing with soldiers coming back with precisely these kinds of issues. That there was another aspect of Knorr's justification that really seemed to stretch the limits of the facts of these cases. He said the reason... He admitted that he did not interview, and they don't routinely interview, any of the family or friends of these soldiers. So how they knew that this condition existed before the soldier joined the military is just impossible to say. He admitted that they don't interview them, but he said talking to the families and other soldiers would be of limited value because they don't have the keen psychological insight to recognize personality disorder.
And people that were in, so that we make this clear that Mr. Town isn't some sort of a wacko or wasn't some kind of a wacko, you talked to people that were in his unit, right?
Oh, absolutely. He, his fellow soldiers described him as one of the best in the unit. He had won a dozen medals for his performance prior to the rocket attack. And I think there's another detail there that really highlights the absurdity of this diagnosis. He was given the Purple Heart for his injuries due to that rocket attack, but yet the Army would not recognize when it came time to give him benefits that he was injured.
Oh, my God. Is there any remedy for this man?
Well, a lot of the...
And not only this man, but how many others did you say?
22,500 over the past 6 years across the entire armed forces. In just the Army alone, it's 5,600, and it keeps going up every year. 5,600 in the Army, that's every year you see it go up by 20, 30, 40. As one of the insiders who processes papers at one of these military installations said to me, at first it seemed normal, you got one or two cases. He said, now it's two or three a day. It seems like everybody suddenly has personality disorder.
So this is no accident. This is no anomaly. This is a concentrated effort to drum people out for financial reasons, evidently.
It certainly seems that way, and I don't think it's just financial. The military has a lot to gain in other aspects of these misdiagnoses. For one, their hospitals are simply overrun. Every time you can usher a soldier out with personality disorder, you free a bed at the hospital for the three or four soldiers who are waiting for treatment.
This is a disgrace. This is just a national disgrace, and it's coming on the heels. Your story coming on the heels of this Walter Reed thing just makes it all the worse. That here we have an administration that. Support the troops, and my God, they come home and they get this kind of support. As a taxpayer, as a human being, I'm very distressed over this.
Well, as one of the soldiers said to me, it's much easier to support the troops when they're dead. Certainly much cheaper.
Oh, my God. Joshua, I want to thank you. Before we leave, once again, I started in and I interrupted you. Does the guy have? Do any of these people have any remedy toward the military on this? Is there anything they can do?
Well, there are certain boards they can go to appeal these cases. As one of the lawyers at one of these forts told me, who handles these specific cases, he said once the commander pushes for a personality disorder diagnosis, and once it gets stamped by the doctor at the fort, erasing that label is extremely difficult. A lot of it's done by backdoor dealing with representatives and members of Congress, but it's for most of these soldiers, it's a permanent label, and they just can't, as one of them said to me, it's a scarlet letter you just can't scrub off.
Oh, my. Well, Joshua, I really want to thank you for being on the program today and laying this mess bare for us. It's something every American needs to know about. It's an abuse, a terrible abuse of our men and women coming home. And I want to thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you, Guy.
Thanks. Doesn't that just make your day? When I first spoke to him about this story, I thought we were talking about one or two people. And, you know, there are people that say, well, you know, it's the military. It's the military. But they've got pressures on them. And they've got pressures on them that they shouldn't have right now. Knowing that we're in a war, sending ungodly amounts of wounded both physically and psychologically, sending them home with no care available, not enough staff, not enough money. This is a national disgrace. And again, I thought we were talking about one or two or five or half a dozen people. 5,600 people like this in the Army alone. And this isn't some wacko we're talking about. This is some guy, like you already heard, he had 12 medals. He got the Purple Heart. He had a damn rocket go off 2 feet above his head. He had the shrapnel in his neck. He comes home and he has this problem. And they talk him into signing out, telling him he'll get all his benefits and everything. Here, just sign right here. And then he doesn't get them. There needs to be a full-scale investigation of this. Not just Mr. Towns' case, but all of them. This is every bit as bad as the Walter Reed incident. Maybe worse. Out and out lying to these people, coercing them. Here, sign here, and don't worry, you'll get all your benefits. You know, don't worry. And then find out later that they don't. What would you feel like if you gave your service to this country and you got repaid like that? This is the thanks these people get for what they've done? This is the thanks they get, the appreciation they get from the United States of America? Support the troops? Jesus, I should think the rest of the soldiers would be up in arms over this. And they probably will be when they find out. You want to talk about something, you know, they're always talking about, well, this will hurt the morale of our troops. What about if they find this out? What could hurt your morale more than this? Got shrapnel pulled out of your neck and you come home and you need treatment. And you get this? Oh, you got a pre-existing condition. Who the hell are we dealing with here? State Farm Insurance or who? Those are the actions of these thieving insurance companies. Oh, it's a pre-existing condition. We can't pay you for that. It's in the fine print. Is it in the fine print when you sign into the military? Actually have this colonel at Fort Carson say, oh, well, you know, it's a dormant condition. It might be set off by some traumatic situation. Hell, I should think it was a traumatic situation that happened. But lying dormant, who could determine that? Who should determine that? Some bozo colonel at Fort Carson is going to determine this guy's, hell, his whole future, his financial future, the future of his health care, the future of how this guy lives his life. I read the story and I read it again. By the way, the story is at thenation.com. Be sure and look it up. Joshua Norse, K-O-R-S. It's a terrific story. It's well written. It's in depth. It's got the facts. But by God, don't anybody tell me, or anybody else for that matter, that I support the troops when you got this kind of crap going on. It's a national disgrace. How many national disgraces do we have to have over this Bush war? before we wake up and say, hey, enough is enough. We'll be right back.
Crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy, crazy for feeling so blue. I you'd love me as long as you wanted. And then someday you'd leave me for somebody new. Worry, why do I let myself worry? Wondering what in the world did I do? I'm crazy for thinking that my love could hold you. I'm crazy for trying, crazy for crying, and I'm crazy for loving you.
Crazy, crazy for feeling so lonely. And I'm crazy, crazy for feeling so blue. And I knew you loved me as long as you wanted. And then someday you leave me for somebody.
Thanks for joining us here in the Guy James Show today. Glad to have all of you along with us. My God, my temper, my blood pressure's up. And I hear stories like that. I told you we'd have a couple of great guests today, and they have been, most certainly. You hear these stories, and, you know, if someone just told you this, and you meet some guy in the street and he tells you this, you think, boy, he sure stretched that story. That can't be true. Certainly our government wouldn't do that to any of our soldiers, especially not 22,000 of them. Nah, they wouldn't do that. No. Let me ask you a question. I could be way off base on this. I may not know what I'm talking about. Okay? But should the president find this out? And when he found out about the VA problem at Walter Reed and other VA problems around the country, and they talk about the president's bully pulpit, would this not be a great time to use the bully pulpit of the presidency? You find out about this story right here about John Towne, spent the last few years fighting for our battle, fighting Bush's battle, and he comes home and gets treated like this along with 22,000 of his friends. And you're the president of the United States and you find this out, can you not step in behind that bully pulpit and tell the people of the United States, most especially tell these 22,000 soldiers, that I will make sure this is put right. I am the President of the United States. I don't know specifically what kind of authority I have to meddle in the affairs of the Army, but I am the Commander-in-Chief. Ultimately, I am responsible for this, and by God, I will make sure it's put right. Can any president worth his salt do that? Am I totally off base here? Money? Who the hell cares about money when we have a situation like this in front of us? We've got money for a lot of things. Well, in fact, we don't have enough money to run the government due to some tax cuts. And factor that into it. So that some son of a bitch sitting over on his 150-foot yacht in Fort Lauderdale can have a tax cut so they can do this to our soldiers? I don't think so. Damn it, this makes me mad. Am I wrong? Can the president not get involved in this? Shouldn't he get involved in this? Jesus. Makes me ashamed. It just makes me ashamed. During the news break, I saw the United States Senate. Republicans and Democrats, and I don't know how the vote turned out. Perhaps some of you do. Voting on whether or not to keep $100 million in the federal budget for the Democratic and the Republican conventions. You know what? I didn't even know that we spent $100 million on the Democratic and Republican conventions. Maybe we never have before, and they were just voting to try and do it this time. And again, I don't know how the vote turned out, but please... $100 million for a Democrat and Republican conventions? 50 mil apiece? First of all, why do they even have conventions anymore? I remember the days when conventions were important. They actually had a function. They don't anymore. Not really. That's an obscenity. To be voting on whether or not they take $100 million of our money and spend it on a Republican and Democratic convention when the conventions are nothing but ceremony and fluff that don't mean a damn thing to anybody anymore. Well, I promised you that I was going to give away a great book. Tom Hartman's new book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class. I'm going to give it to the second caller that calls in right now. Second caller, going to give away this book, and we'll send it out tomorrow. Okay? Boy, the phone's just lighting up. Either people don't care about the book or they can't read. We'll wait and see how this turns out. Just a thought. I saw... that the Mormons, the reddest of red states in Utah, support from the Mormons for the Bush War have gone from 65% down to only 44%. Let me tell you something. When you're George Bush and you've lost the Mormons, when you're George Bush and you've lost the Mormon vote, it's time to take down your sign and get out of town. Believe me. that's an incredible story. When the Mormons vote against George W. Bush, when the majority of them are against his in the war, he might as well give it up. Might as well give it up. Let's see here. We got one call here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello. Calling about the book. You already give it away?
No, not yet. You're first.
Oh, okay. Darn. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right. Still waiting for that second call. I think somebody's trying to call me on the cell phone. Do it. That won't do it. I don't know how you got my cell phone number anyway. You have to call the studio line. That's what I get. Is that a stupid thing to do? Leave your cell phone on when you come to the... How many of you saw this? Well, I guess we'll just turn this old phone off here right now. How stupid can I be? Sorry about that. Grantham, Pennsylvania. How many know what Grantham, Pennsylvania is famous for? Anybody know? No takers on that one? Anybody know who Monica Goodling is? Alberto Gonzalez's senior counsel and White House liaison. Graduated from Pat Robertson's Regent University Law School that we talked about yesterday. Well, apparently, she did her undergraduate work at some place known as, get this, Messiah University. So it's... I'm trying to be respectful here. So it's pretty clear that this 33-year-old is a dyed-in-the-wool social conservative who was likely hired for that reason. Apparently, the Bush hiring practices were more systemic than we thought. There are more than 150 graduates, get this, 150 graduates of Regent University serving in the Bush administration right now from a little-known law school. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Hello.
Hello, Guy.
Yes.
Hello, Guy.
Yes.
Hey, this is Chuck Roberts from Virginia Beach. How you doing?
Hi, Chuck.
Hey, I just wanted to say in regard to that speaker that you had on there a few minutes ago regarding those troops.
By the way, Chuck, before you make your point, you're the second caller. Do you want the book?
Sure. I'll take the book.
Send me an email with your address, and we'll send it out tomorrow. GuyJames@theGuyJamesShow.com.
Okay, all right, I'll do that. Hey, the point I wanted to make is that these servicemen that are getting out, what I would recommend that they do is if they can see this coming down the road, that they're going to be deprived of their benefits or educational benefits, medical benefits, maybe given less than an honorable discharge, I would recommend that they contact their senators and write them a letter, tell them about their service and just do sort of a good job of articulating what they've done, where they've been, all that stuff like that. I think I've had a family member that's went through some of that, and we were successful at stopping that from happening once the letter hit Congress. It's usually too shameful for the services to go through and deprive them of their benefits, but you have to do that before you get out.
I hope that provides some relief for some of these people. I sure do. And I think you're right. That is a good thing to do.
You just got to do it. You know, you got to do it before you get out, because once you get out, the appeal process is pretty much loaded against the servicemen, you know. But if you can do it early and get that letter, there's still a lot of public support for the service members that are doing the job over there in Iraq. When one of those letters hit Congress and they start telling what they've done, how many tours they've been in Iraq and that sort of thing, and that their particular service is about to let them out with reduced benefits, usually they, at least in our case, they turned around on a dime and corrected that situation.
Well, and it's probably too late to do anything for those who've already gotten out. It's a shameful situation. Hey, thanks. That's a good thing for everybody to know, and they should do. And I think you're right. I've read several cases of where, you know, the congressman or senator gets involved, and that carries a heavy weight on that. It really does.
Yeah. Okay. Well, appreciate you.
And send me that email with your address, and we'll get that book out to you tomorrow.
We'll do. Take care.
And I see Nilo has let us know in the chat room that the bill to remove $100 million in funding for the Republican and Democratic Party convention 2008 rejected. $100 million, $50 million apiece to run their damn conventions, when they've already got their nominee picked, and they're still going to blow $100 million between the two of them. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my. It's, you read some of this stuff, you just have to wonder. 150 graduates of Regent University, a almost unknown law school, Christian law school, and did her undergraduate work at Messiah University. I think she, is she going before the Senate tomorrow and just going to sit there and give them the fifth? Is that it? Love to know the story behind this, Monica Goodling, and we will find it out one way or another, I think. If it has to be another, then so be it. I hope we do. We're, boy, I'm having one of those days. I just can't get over some of these stories in the news today. I really can't. Going to pause for a quickie, and we'll be back in a minute. Hey, we're back for the last 10 minutes of the show. You can still join us, 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254. I see Alberto Gonzalez went to Chicago today and ran into a little bit of an embarrassing situation. He dashed out of a Chicago news conference this afternoon in just 2.5 minutes, ducking questions about how his office gave U.S. Attorney Patrick Fitzgerald a subpar rating. Not a good place to be appearing when questions are asked about Patrick Fitzgerald, one of the most hardcore prosecutors in the United States. Gonzalez is getting increasing calls for his resignation, and I don't think anything he can say will save his ass at this point. I really don't think so. And I thought you might be interested in hearing this little tidbit that I picked up. Saudi Arabian King Abdullah, whose country is a close U.S. ally, slammed on Wednesday the, quote, illegitimate foreign occupation, his words, end quote, of Iraq in an opening speech to the annual Arab summit in Riyadh. Arab leaders have kicked off a two-day summit in the Saudi capital, aiming to revive a dormant plan for peace with Israel and launch a diplomatic offensive to resolve the Middle East conflict. And quoting him once again, in beloved Iraq, blood is being shed among brothers in the shadow of an illegitimate foreign occupation, and ugly sectarianism threatens civil war, Abdullah said. He also said that Arab nations, which are planning to revive a five-year-old Middle East peace plan at the summit, would not allow any foreign force to decide the future of the region. Now, Abdullah, that's Bush's good pal. That's Cheney's hunting buddy. Not the one who got shot. They own a big farm in Virginia where they go hunting and take the Bushy people. Take them hunting out there. But this is Big Buddy talking here. Not going to allow this. Not going to allow this. How are they not going to allow it? They're holding the purse strings, baby. They're holding that black gold, and they can hold that over the U.S.'s head any time they want to, and it appears to me that they might. Speaking of people who, well, I have nothing but contempt for this man, this James Inhofe from Oklahoma. The word stupid bastard in Webster's dictionary, his picture's got to be under it. It has to be. People from Oklahoma, help out on this, will you? Can you get rid of this guy? Can you vote him out of office? Please. Admit your wrongdoing and get rid of this guy. Oh. James Inhofe. Got to be the stupidest man in the United States Congress. I can't think of anybody with a... Well, anyway, fresh from his face-to-face tussle with former Vice President Al Gore, in which I think Inhofe got totally humiliated, Senator James Inhofe is vowing to stall Gore's hotly anticipated Capitol concert to draw attention to global warming. Inhofe believes that climate change is the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on the American people. Now, and he says that's common knowledge in the Capitol. Here's a guy that claims that he knows anything about this. Anything? James Inhofe, he's going to challenge Al Gore? I think without question you'd have to give Al Gore credit as being an expert on this now, on global warming. And James Inhofe, Dunce, Oklahoma, is going to challenge Al Gore, and he's trying to keep him from having the Capitol West front for the Live Earth concert tour. collaboration between Gore and the promoter Kevin Wall, who also did the Live Aid charity concerts, by the way. Inhofe said, there's never been a partisan political event at the Capitol, and this is a partisan political event. You dumbass. This is a human event. Makes you just want to spit every time you see that, guys. And we had an event here in Florida today over on the other coast, not so far away. Did you see the picture of the sailboat carrying about 100 Haitian migrants come ashore near Hallandale Beach early Wednesday morning? One of them died while swimming to the beach. The migrants were traveling aboard what appeared to be a 30-foot sailing ship, and when the ship ran aground, dozens of them plunged into the water. They then scattered across the beach. The Coast Guard responded to the scene. They'd been at sea for 22 days. And many of you might be thinking, well, if they reached the shore, they can stay. Right? No. Only if you're Cuban. If you're Cuban and come by boat, well, you reach the shore, you can stay. But if you're Haitian, no, you cannot. A lot of folks have stayed, a lot of Haitian folks, and found a way to stay and go through immigration and whatnot. There's a large, thriving Haitian population in Miami. My goodness, there's every kind of population you can think of in Miami. You talk about a multicultural city. That you go over there during the year, and there's one festival. There's a festival every week. Festival from Colombia, festival from Argentina, festival from Brazil. Every kind that you can think of in Miami. It is truly a multicultural. But if you're Cuban and you come by boat, why, welcome. You can stay. But if you're Haitian, nah, go back home and suffer. What else did we have here? Don't want to get started. I see Circuit City is going to have big layoffs. They're laying off 3,400 store associates, and you know why? Circuit City is laying off 3,400 store associates and hiring lower-paid workers to replace them. They said they're well above market-based salary for their role, and the new employees hired to replace them will be paid at the current market range. I know a couple people that work at Circuit City, and I'm having a hard time believing this, that these people were making well above the market-based salary range for their role, because I know what a couple of them make, and I wouldn't think it'd be well above anything, any kind of a wage that I know of. So congratulations, Circuit City, for firing 3,400 people and rehiring cheaper labor. Thank you very much. Oh, well, kind of a depressing day on the show. Maybe we'll get some good news some of these days soon. Maybe tomorrow. You never know. No time for any more calls. I've got a couple of lights flashing here, but we just don't have time to give you any justice to talk right now. If we talk, we'd have to talk for 10 seconds, and that wouldn't be long enough. So call back tomorrow, okay? It's been a pleasure having all of you along with us today. I would like to know, being on the internet, we can tell how many people are listening and so forth. And I'd love to know what happens with you 4 o'clock people. Where do you come from every day at 4 o'clock? What are you listening to that you switch over to the program at 4 o'clock? Send me an email. Let me know that. Will you? A bunch of you. Sure, like to know. Have a big spike every day at 4 o'clock, and I'd love to know where it comes from. What programs are you listening to around that you all of a sudden switch over? That'll just help out. We like to know who, where, why, and all that sort of thing. Thank you so much for joining us here today on the Guy James Show. I appreciate you listening very much. Don't forget, we're still running our fundraiser. Not exactly going the way we'd like it to, but head on over to the Guy James Show. You can find out what to do there if you'd like to contribute to the program. We'd surely appreciate it. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Guy James Show today on the Head On Radio Network. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't...